We had just come across this script that, ironically, David and I had done a reading of like 10 years earlier. And I turned to Michelle and I said, crazy question, would you wanna produce a movie together? And she was like, yeah, no.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. A movie is a piece of entertainment, but there's another way to look at it. A movie is also a business. There are partners, budgets, payroll, marketing, you name it. Everyone must work together towards a common vision. The deadline is tight, the stakes are high, and at the end of it, investors and studios expect a marketable product that's going to return their investment and then some. I've always wondered what it takes to make something like this a success. Actors and directors are always interviewed about their artistic visions, but it's much rarer to hear a candid conversation about how to make the business work. But as it so happens, I know three people who would be willing to get real with me because I was a small investor in their project. It was a film called Egg, and it premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in 2018. As a small investor, I got to learn a ton about the business. And this also gave me access to the three people most responsible for creating the movie. They're big names in the business. There's Michelle Gainless, the former president of Comedy Central, responsible for basically building The Daily Show. There's also Alicia Reiner, an actress famous for her role on Orange is the New Black, and her husband, the accomplished actor David Allen Bache. They decided to partner on Egg in 2017, and their mission was to tell a story about modern motherhood, and very importantly, to hire a majority of females on and in the film. And they did. They assembled an amazing group of women, including the actresses Anna Camp and Christina Hendricks, as well as director Mariana Polka and writer Risa Meekenberg. But of course, then, they had to actually make the thing. And how did that go? Not long ago, I sat down with Michelle, Alicia, and David to talk about it. Coming up, a frank conversation about finding success in the high-stakes world of movie making. So how do three highly accomplished actors and executives come together to create an indie film? Sure, they had contacts, but they also had to do so much of it themselves. So when I sat down with Michelle, Alicia, and David to talk about this project, I started by asking them this. Why did they want to become movie entrepreneurs in the first place?
I first fell in love with Michelle. You thought I was going to say David because yeah. Our other producer is David Allen Bache, my husband. But I mean Michelle. I had a screening of the first film that I produced called Equity, which was the first ever female-driven Wall Street movie. And Michelle came to one of the screenings and we chatted afterwards and realized we both had daughters at the same school who are now besties.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's really, you know, that's what I call New York mom mafia.
Totally.
And we started chatting and I thought she was so smart and creative and spectacular. And she had just left being president of Comedy Central. And we had just come across this script that, ironically, David and I had done a reading of like 10 years earlier. And I turned to Michelle and I said, crazy question, would you wanna produce a movie together? And she was like, yeah, no. And then,
of course, being somebody who'd been on the corporate side for many years, my thought was, and I wasn't just an inside voice, it was an outside voice, said, why would you want me to produce this with you? I've never produced anything. And David and Alicia said, well, do you know people who would want to invest in this? And I said, well, sure, I guess. And do you know people, I mean, we need to cast it. Do you know managers and agents? Well, of course. All right, I'm in.
Now, wait, you were president of Comedy Central, but you've never produced or did a movie, right? Was this totally
foreign? No, it was movies. I was always in the television world, and I was on the management executive side, and certainly I worked on developing series, but from a very high level. I didn't get involved at this stage. I was in the sort of, let's look at some pilots or let's look at some scripts, and then the development team would go off and produce, but I never was an on-set producer, physical production. This was from the ground up, and Alicia and David had done it before.
Got it. So now you're thinking, Michelle, now how do you involve your husband, David?
Well, from the onset when we talked about doing this, this was something we were planning on doing together. David had been an associate producer on Equity, and really, because I was both acting and producing in that, he was the on-set producer every day. And that's really the fire putter outer. You really need someone who has spectacular people and management skills. And that's coming back around to Michelle. That's part of also why I thought she would be terrific at it, because she had been a manager of humans for a very long time. Yeah. And understood conflict resolution and taught, I feel like I learned so much from her as a, I would say my dad was a management consultant, and I really so value and look up to people who have those skills that I, as an actor, don't, right, haven't really developed. So yeah, we knew that if David was acting in this, we needed someone on set who could really take that role and be that day-to-day fire putter outer person. And right, that's really, wouldn't you agree, having done it now, that that's a lot of what it is?
But you know what's really interesting about that, and really what I wanted to kind of talk about on the podcast, is like how making a film is like building a business. And I think in building a business, it's so important. Like the biggest thing is communicating with other people, is putting out fires. It's dealing with people so you get them all on the same page and you get them actually to do what you want to do.
Exactly. And I think the other thing that made this business work well is the three of us have different networks of people. And when you're building a business, you're relying on your networks. When we need to hire producers, you put the word out to everyone you know in the industry. When the union comes day two and says, we're going to flip you, you need to be a union shop, we call everybody we know who's produced and worked with the union and get their advice. And David and Alicia have deep contacts in different parts of the business. So it's people management, it's putting out fires, it's using your networks. And I think being an entrepreneur, shall I say, later in life, as opposed to when you're 22, you have this deep reservoir of goodwill, hopefully you've built up.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you have that reservoir and that goodwill and you have those contacts, but you're still going through it now. You guys had produced a movie prior to this, so that was maybe your first taste, but this had to be completely new in terms of some of the things that you had to go through. And how did it start? How did you guys hooked up at that event? And then what's the next day like? And this is the first podcast. I've never even done a podcast with more than one person, but today we have three.
That's right.
Only because
if you hear the mic moving from person to person. That's, that's it.
Thank you, David.
So we all agreed to do this crazy thing together and set out to raise the money to do it, which involved asking everyone we knew who had any interest in being a movie producer. And so we didn't have any studio behind us. So in that sense, it really was entrepreneurial. We didn't have really seed money, and that's kind of what we were looking for in the business equivalent of that. And the raising of the money was sort of the boring part. We got it done, and we got it done remarkably quickly, entirely due to the two women sitting to my right. And then we said, well, when are we going to shoot it? And even before we had chosen a location, it's primarily one location, but we said, well, when are we going to shoot it? And there was some talk of doing it in the winter. There was some talk of doing it at a certain time. But the real reason that we did it in the summer was,
we both have kids in school, and we thought, oh, let's do it while they're at camp.
Perfect way to ruin your summer.
Exactly. Back to the Mom Mafia Network, we were like, okay, what makes sense here? We don't have to pay for childcare for a whole month. Let's do it that month. And it worked out really well, honestly. And that, you know, one thing I like to say around filmmakers, and I believe it's true of entrepreneurship as well, set a schedule for yourself. Set like really specific time goals. So we had what's called the time lock. In a thriller movie, when you're writing a thriller movie, you create a time lock to keep the thrill going, right? And you have that ticking clock. And we created our own time lock, which all of a sudden we had to do it this summer. Crazy. And we had to do it. And it was like, we had 2 months to find our entire crew and to like to do it all. And it was crazy, but exciting. And we did it.
No, I remember just being involved only from a standpoint where I was a very minor investor. And I remember talking to Michelle a lot and like, Michelle lives right up the block and I'd see her running around. And like, I mean, like she would, I couldn't believe the amount of energy and action and like, I got to get this done. I got to get this done. But did that help you guys setting that timeline, especially this being kind of your first foray?
I think so. I'd love to hear what everybody else says. I'm actually going to jump back for a second because I feel like there's something important entrepreneurship wise in reference to investors to talk about, which is I really didn't think any of our investors from equity would necessarily invest in this project because equity was about women on Wall Street.
Right.
And this was about motherhood and artists and a very different tone. Like Woody was a thriller and this was a dark comedy. And so I had zero expectation of that. And yet I told my investors about it and many of them did decide to invest again. And that to me was them feeling like, oh, I had a great experience on equity. I'd like to do that again. And I mention that because I think it's important for entrepreneurs. Even if you shift business, even if you shift markets and shift what you're doing completely, if you've built that goodwill that Michelle was talking about, if you've sort of created a situation where you've created trust, people will want to invest in you again.
100%. That to me as an entrepreneur and starting businesses, like I've always looked at it like you are investing in the person. And at the end of the day, I don't care. And like, that's why for me and my wife, when we looked at this and first off, we love the mission and the idea of the movie and we'll get into that. But we know Michelle, it didn't matter. And I think that comes down to when you're investing in someone and if you're an entrepreneur, like it's about you more so most of the time, the majority of the time than the idea. I mean, you need a good idea to be successful, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the person.
Because I think part of it is trusting that that person will execute to the absolute best of their ability. And there's so many unknowns in the business world, in all worlds, be it entertainment or entrepreneurship. So at the bottom, at the most base level, you're investing in the person.
Totally.
And knowing that how they will do their best.
I was going to mention, I think one of the challenges was, you know, we talked about gathering the money and then setting the timeline and knowing when we wanted to shoot it. And what was interesting for me is that once you do that, once you know, we found office space, I mean, it really is like any other business, right? So we found people to back us. We found a space to work in. And then we hired all the employees and then we had to go make our product. But what was interesting was that from the moment we started to make our product, we were sort of in a time warp ahead to when businesses are bulging at the seams, right? So we get to a point, you hope, with your business where you say we're doing well enough, we either have to get a bigger space and hire more employees. Yes, it's bigger overhead, but we're expecting bigger profits. Or you're in that uncomfortable place where you say, all right, we have to stay in this small office where we are, squeeze out as much profit as we can before we go to spend more per square foot on a bigger office. And that there's that uncomfortable space before you expand. All of making movies happens in that uncomfortable space.
Sure.
Immediately.
So are you figuring out when you're making this film, because at first, what did you set the amount that you wanted to raise? Did you know that because you had budgeted that out and said, this is exactly what we need? And is there like a low price version and then a high price version? And how did that work?
Yeah, we set a budget. We had a line producer, as it's called in the movie business. So our accountant on the production side, a production person who knows how much it's going to cost for every part of the film, make out a budget. And you always know in any business, but in production in particular, it's going to be plus or minus 10. We then always, the product comes first. In television, you say, you know, just put it all on the screen. And that's what we tried to put it all on the screen. So it was about the right talent and getting some high-end talent to pair with our high-end talent producers. So Christina Hendricks and Anna Camp and Benga Akinabi came in, and then you adjust the budget a little bit differently. Right. And then you want a second camera team, a second unit to film simultaneously. So you're like, well, if we do that, it's going to help our options in the edit room. And so the budget grew as it does, but in that uncomfortable space of still trying to keep everything together. And then there's another piece of it that you mentioned, particularly for Egg, which is probably applicable to every entrepreneur you're talking to these days, which is mission. So the mission behind our film, which is really how Alicia and David sucked me in, was, and I say that in the best possible way, was getting more women in positions behind the camera, as well as in front of the camera, but really behind the camera, to help level the playing field. So it started with the script was written by a woman. So we had a female screenwriter. We had two of three of our producers. David was our token male. And and then it was, we're going to hire a director who's going to be a woman. And that took us a while to find the right person. There are a lot of great female directors, but we were so close to production and our timeline was so tight that a lot of them were already busy. And we could have very easily said, you know what, we don't have the time, let's just get a guy. But I quote, I think, something that was originated with Oprah somewhere in the world, which is, don't just say you're going to try to hire women or try to have a diverse team, just do it. And so that was our mantra, was just hire women. And so it took us a little longer. It didn't stretch our budget, only in the fact that our pre-production time and some of the post-production, it was finding the right people and have the right availability and being very nimble about it. So we ended up having a 70% female team, crew, et cetera. And that was challenging to your question earlier, what are some of the challenges? But when you have a mission and it's not just about making money or it's not just about making a film for the sake of art, which was obviously part of this, but it was a mission that was important to us. We wanted to show our daughters. And that's one of the things I'm most proud of.
Was that the driving force, wanting to show your daughters?
That's such a good question. I would say for me, yes, and wanting to create art that not only is in that mission in the hiring, but also in that mission in the storytelling. The idea of telling a story of a woman who is choosing throughout the story to be childless by choice was really important to me. And navigating what it is to be a working parent or working artist and what parent means in 2019, right. I found to be a very powerful and important story and part of that mission of allowing women the integrity of their own choices. And I wanted to just throw in two other like little things. I like, especially because this is about entrepreneurship, one thing Michelle said about having everything on screen. So part of what that means is when you take your budget and try and put it on screen as much as possible, you're trying to get as much else as you can free. So that's how the way you do that is by begging, borrowing, and stealing everything that you possibly can, including getting water sponsors and getting snack sponsors. And how many things can you try and get for less or get a bargain on so that you can, your product is the number one thing you're spending money on.
Yeah.
The other piece that I just wanted to say was we did have this union issue, which was a deep surprise. And I bring that up for entrepreneurs because there's always surprises, and particularly some around unions or some around legal issues, or there's always surprise in creating a business.
How did you deal? So there's a lot of good stuff in there, but on the union side, because I know from that standpoint, if you weren't prepared and didn't understand or face that challenge, union labor is a lot more expensive than if you're just hiring whoever you're hiring. So like, how did you handle that?
So first I want to say I'm a proud union member. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild, right, and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. I've been a member of the Hotel Motel Trades 106 in New York when I was waiting tables before I was making a living as an actor. So I believe in people's ability and right to organize, right, and I believe in organized labor. That being said, yes, union labor is usually more expensive. It's more expensive, you hope, because it's of a higher quality labor and those laborers have a better experience and you're providing a safe workplace for them. All of which we wanted to do, and we were doing anyway. And in the film business, there's lots of different ways to do it. You can go completely non-union, and we did not do that. You can hire union department heads, and that's what we did, and then other people that are not involved in the union. But basically, what we did was we calculated what we could afford and where we would fall in the scale of who we would hire. And what happens with the Teamsters is they either agree that you can do what you're doing or they come in and say, you can't do that. You have to do what we want you to do. And it was something we had considered, but we had kind of crossed our fingers and hoped that we wouldn't have to cross that bridge. That bridge arrived on the sidewalk one afternoon earlier than we perhaps thought it would. I have to give credit to Michelle and Alicia for handling it. I was a little too flustered and taken aback and frustrated that things were now going to cost more. And I didn't necessarily feel that the money we were spending was going to be going towards paying young people who were going to be able to learn about filmmaking, yeah, and become a union member. I felt the money was sort of going in a different direction. But we rallied and we called all the other people we know who had produced film and who this had happened to, which is also a really great lesson for any business, is when that surprise comes up, you can panic, which I did, to be honest.
Good thing you got good partners, correct, who yes, talked you off the ledge.
Yes, correct. But after you panic for a little bit, reach out to mentors. Reach out to people who are doing what you're doing. Reach out to people who have more experience and say, how did you handle it? Right. What are my options? You get a good range of possibilities, and then you figure out what works for you, and you solve the problem.
And how did you guys handle that situation and move on and be better for it?
Yeah, we folded like a cheap suit. Yeah.
I know you better than that.
It was during production, so I wanted David and Alicia to be able to focus on, because we didn't have like a day to stop down, right? We had a very tight schedule of shooting. So I wanted David and Alicia to focus on being on set and doing their acting jobs. And the other producer on the film who we hired, Devin Schneider, came with me to talk to the rep, and we went out and had coffee and we tried to make our case for why it would be hurtful to the film, actually, to go the route they wanted us to, because we wouldn't necessarily be able to hire as many women, as many people. We had a mission here. And he listened. And then, you know, within a couple of days, he called and said, okay, where's the money? Basically. you know, as David said, we called the people we knew. Fortunately, having been at Viacom for many years, having had outside labor counsel that we worked with, one unnamed attorney talked me through what he thought a good strategy was, also spoke with somebody else who runs a production company who knew the person we were negotiating with to get his insight. And when we made the best deal that we thought we could make at the time, and the team, the production staff was mixed about what they wanted. Some of them didn't want to have to. There's lots of rules and regulations that we won't get into now. It could be a whole other series. But we made the best deal we could, which is, I think, what you do in that situation, because we couldn't stop down, because we had to keep the cameras rolling. That's showbiz.
Yeah, you got to keep going. Now, how much did you raise? What was your budget? And how much more did this end up costing you? Average.
I would say it cost us about 25% more than we anticipated.
Yeah. And you had to go raise that extra money, or?
We had to cut here and there. Yeah. We raised a little extra money, and then our production tax credit came in handy in that way. And so, you know, I can let David talk to how that impacted sort of how we handled the finances post.
Yeah, briefly, New York City has a roughly 30% tax credit. So for qualified expenses and things that you spend in New York City that they approve, you can come back and they will send you back that 30%. It usually takes 18 to 24 months for them to get that back to you. So a lot of filmmakers will finance that credit. They'll sell that credit to somebody else.
Interesting.
They'll give away a few percent, but they'll get it very quickly. And we had kind of always planned to do that. That was part of the plan. But that money that we got back from the tax credit that we had hoped would go back into the coffers and then thus back to the investors. That money, because of the issue we had with the union, ended up going into back into the production budget. And a lot of it is off at the IATSE building now somewhere. So that was probably 15 or 20% of the overages on the film. Otherwise, our budget was really pretty accurate. And I imagine whatever business you're dealing with, there's a gaming commission or there's a city permits or there's taxes on whatever it is you're selling, and whatever that widget is, there are costs that come with it. And Michelle makes Michelle makes a good point, which is the surprise comes, and then gather information and make the best deal you can and try not to let it slow your business down and move forward.
And the other thing that I will say, for me, there's a certain, because I always say after I make a movie, I'm never doing this ever again.
I was going to ask you that at the end, if you guys would ever do this again, but we'll get to that later.
But there's a certain joy in when someone else calls you and says, oh my God, this is about to happen or this might happen. What do I do? There's a like, oh, I've been there. Let me help talk you off the ledge. Joy isn't necessarily the word. I'm like searching for the correct word and I can't find it at this moment. But there's a satisfaction almost, or a how can my experience help others?
Great. So let me also ask you guys, because a lot of things were going on. I think it was 2017 when you start, and prior to the Me Too movement, when was that, right around the same, like when that kicked? It like, was that an effect on you guys and thinking like, hey, this mission now, it's really on?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just saying you met Christina at the Women's March, right?
Oh, right, yes. I met Christina at the Women's March.
Christina Hendricks,
right, who plays my best friend in the movie. And we were having martinis, and I was like, I feel like she would be so spectacular in this role. Yeah, so that was the Women's March. The Me Too of it all.
More from our guest. But first, a word from our sponsors. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. And why is Gusto better than the other guys? Well, PC Mag and Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. Gusto also makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. How often do you actually love your payroll provider? That is true. So, most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. And you no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great services for your team. So, to help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive, limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/HSH.
And our next sponsor.
WorkHuman Live is not your ordinary HR or leadership conference. WorkHuman Live's mission is to unlock the future of the human workplace by uniting and inspiring attendees through transformative ideas, conversations, and authentic human connections. This year's event is happening May 11th to 14th, 2020 in San Antonio, Texas. And what will you miss if you're not at WorkHuman Live? Well, 70-plus sessions led by industry thought leaders around the most pressing issues in today's workplace. Unparalleled opportunities to connect and network with like-minded peers. And you can also earn professional development credits for SHRM, HRPA, HRCI, ATD, and World at Work. WorkHuman Live is more than an HR conference. It's a global movement to make work more human. What started out as a few hundred people during the first event in 2015 is now thousands strong, all championing the vision of celebrating one another through positivity and inclusivity at work and in life. So register today at www.workhumanlive.com and use code PODCAST to save $200. Again, register today at www.workhumanlive.com and use code PODCAST to save $200. And we're back.
Yeah, no, that's amazing to hear from someone like yourself with like decades of work and working on sets and to hear that. And it's really amazing to Michelle, to your point, that a lot of those people on the set were saying this is the first time or first time that it was, I can't believe that, like in terms of your business and that was the case, but it sounds like it worked out really well. I know it did. So take me to that point now. You have to rush. I remember you shot everything over like just a couple days, right? What was that like?
It was 17 days, yeah.
And how did that, in terms of doing that, you get it done, everything's complete. So now how does it work? Because also I wanted to bring up that a lot of things are changing in the industry. You guys know this 1,000 times better than me, but like with streaming and of course, Netflix, how did you guys, did you change mid like what you're doing? Because like, it's almost like, hey, I'm making a movie and it's going in theaters, but now, was that a factor? Or did you know this ahead of time?
We knew a little bit ahead of time that we wanted to rush to get the film submitted to Sundance and Tribeca. And those were our two, sort of our two top choices. So the post-production rush was, it's in the can, we've got all the footage. We found a spectacular editor who also was a woman and faster and more specific than any male editor I've ever worked with. So we wanted to rush to get it submitted to those festivals. And as we were, it's really interesting, as we were doing our post and as we were submitting, we did not go to Sundance. We did premiere at Tribeca as one of their spotlight films, which was a great experience. I think we're all very proud of that. But in the time it took us to finish the film, edit the film, score the film, and get it to those festivals, the market had changed under our feet. Literally, the year before, there were records set at Sundance for some spending by Amazon and Netflix and others. And the year after, Amazon and Netflix bought nothing.
So amazing.
I think literally the number was zero. So it was a very interesting thing to see a market shift under your feet and to have to sort of change what your expectations were going
to
be.
And to be clear, why that was it was just as Amazon, Hulu, Netflix were beginning to make their own content. They were just starting their own studios. So they all of a sudden, the year before, they were buying. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, we don't need anything. We're making our own stuff. We, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the and we see it every day with how Netflix is now making movies that they are putting into theaters and then submitting for awards while at the same time putting it on streaming. Exactly, The Irishman.
Yeah, I was just thinking The Irishman, they're having issues with that.
The movie that won Best Foreign Film last year that escapes me.
Roma,
thank you. But that was, you know, as you know, Rob, because we pitched you as an investor, Equity had come out during a different moment in time. And so a lot of the films that had been made and previously bought by Netflix and Amazon were now in the same pool of films as Egg, going after all of the sort of boutique and art-focused distributors. And we were very fortunate to get distribution with Gravitas and premiered in theaters. And you can get the movie on iTunes and Amazon and
yes, please.
Go out and tell your friends. And
go subscribe.
Exactly.
Go buy it.
And we're 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Yes. I think, you know, noticed that when I was doing my due diligence today and like some of these like amazing critics, I mean, I just saw that was like just so incredible what they were saying. I mean, from a lot of different critics, and I was trying to pull them up on my cell phone, but I can't find them. But I'm sure you guys know them by heart.
Well, it was incredibly gratifying because commercially it wasn't the big success that we had hoped for and our investors had hoped for. But creatively, we're also proud of the film. And I was actually saying this to Lucy this morning because I was telling her that we were coming over to do this podcast with you. And she said, are you sad it wasn't as successful? And I said, you know, I'm so proud of the film and the art that we made and the environment we created. But really, the finished product is such a wonderful film. And I said, I've not met a person, and obviously maybe people aren't telling me, but I've not met a person who didn't get something out of the film.
No.
And that's what's really gratifying.
And I, you know, look, the reason we were interested in investing is I have two daughters. My wife, I remember at the time, had just left. She had left to, it wasn't about motherhood, but well, I guess it was. She left to take care of the kids. She tried to go back to work. And like these dopes who she was like ahead of and the boss, like now all of a sudden she's working under them and like she's been thrown down to the bottom. And like, I was just like, this is such a joke. And I think for us, it was much more, especially a movie like this, was much more about the mission that you guys were driving and the art. But it is incredible because like a year earlier, and that's with a lot of businesses, I've sold my business a couple times. If I had waited a few years or it's a completely different financial story. But that really doesn't determine, I think, the success of this. So like to answer Lucy's question, that's really what you want to talk about.
And we made the product. We made a really good product. We brought the product to market. And in our neighborhood, there's a restaurant they've been building for 2 years. And I watched it. And as we passed the 1 year mark, I turned to my wife and I said, there will be a for rent sign on that window before they ever get close to opening and selling any food.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks ago, the stop work order went up and the for rent sign went up. And I felt so bad for those entrepreneurs who were trying to open that restaurant because they simply couldn't execute.
But
they
couldn't get it done. It's so funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's really sad. But like I play a game with like my kids when we walk down the street. And we're like, that's not lasting. That'll be gone in 3 months. And to a point, it's so true. And I always wonder, who are these entrepreneurs? They haven't done their due diligence. How do they think this restaurant is going to work on the Upper West Side? Like, it baffles me sometimes. And like, you guys really, you did this and put a budget together and plans. And like, the plan was great, I think.
I play the same game. I love that game. I love that game. And I love that game. Yeah. And I love that game about all entrepreneurship because what I love about entrepreneurship is people have an idea in their head and they make it a reality. It becomes a glass. It becomes something tangible. And that's magic to me. And that's what art is about. And what's very special about this for me is when we were bringing investors in, one thing we would say is, look, we can't promise anything. Film is a very, very volatile market, similar to restaurants.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we will make a piece of art, and that art will be there like the painting on your wall forever. And you will forever be able to say, I helped make that piece of art. And that piece of art speaks to this moment in time and this moment about how we define parenthood. And that's something really special.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And just, it's so interesting. And the reason I was really psyched about this podcast is what you guys did and is such a little microcosm of building everyday business, and you did it in such a short amount of time, and you had so many lessons and you learned. And one thing I wanted to ask in the time we have left, which isn't much, is going through that, is this something you would do again? You know, Michelle, you were running Comedy Central. Both of you guys are like super accomplished actors. Like, you know, it's probably like, you took a big part, a long part of your life. I mean, a lot of time, a lot of effort to do this. Is it something that you would consider again?
I can only speak for myself. I'll let the married couple to my left speak for themselves. I would 100% do it again. I would do a lot of things differently, but it's one of the most gratifying work experiences I've ever had. I built networks. I was there when we launched Comedy Central and saw it, grow and grow and grow. And that was a different kind of architect. And it wasn't my own money or wasn't playing with other people's money. Not playing, but I was, you know, there was obviously a big corporation behind it. I love building things. I've got some projects now, as these guys always do, building other storytelling arcs, whether it might be podcasts or TV shows or films. But the idea of building something and doing it with a very clear mission and creating it, I think, to David's point, like we brought it to market. We made it and we did it in record time. I think we had our first, it was February, and we were sitting outside at Le Pan Quotidien on the Upper West Side. And I was actually supposed to bring a colleague of mine to meet David and Alicia about Egg because she had a company, maybe she would invest and she couldn't make it. And that's when they turned to me and said, do you want to produce this with us? And that was February of 2017. And we locked picture by Christmas of 2017. So, I mean, it was within a year we had done what we set out to do, which is, as I know now, incredibly unusual.
It's amazing.
And a testament to the team and the people we hired. We had Mariana Polka, was an amazing director, and it just felt like magic at times, to Alicia's point, and I would sign up for that again.
Alicia, how about you?
I always finish every movie and say I'm never doing this
You said that at the beginning.
And now I feel, first of all, I'm so excited to hear Michelle say that. I've never heard her say that before. And,
did you hear me say I do a few things differently?
Yeah. We all would. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I remember saying to Michelle so many times, like, this is only our second movie. We don't know what we're doing.
Right.
We don't know what we're doing. People make hundreds of movies. They're like producers who I look up to, who I know, you know, like the Paula Weinsteins of the world. Like, this is our set. We're baby producers. But yeah, I would do it again if I had a story that spoke to me deeply. And yes, I would make, you know, you learn from your mistakes in everything you do. And the one thing I also wanted to come back to that Michelle was saying earlier around our mission, the magic of entrepreneurship too is you are the visionary and you get to make the decisions. There's a power in you being the person. And if you say, oh, this is my company and I'm hiring women, you get to do that.
Yeah.
And when you're at a huge corporation, you don't get that ownership and that power. But when it's your baby, you get to make those decisions of doing things differently than have always been done and perhaps have been done to you in ways that felt uncomfortable. And that's really a freedom of entrepreneurship that's really, really special.
Did that play into you being this famous actress and being in a lot of shows, and now you were running the business? So did that play into you and how you treated the other people on set?
Absolutely. And I will say, like, when I went back to work on certain jobs, I would be like, oh, this is not run the way we ran things. Oh, this hurts. You know, like, it hurt my soul a little bit, the lack of respect for people or the lack of female representation. I went back to one job and I was like, oh, there's so many men here. I forgot what it's like to be surrounded by men.
Yeah.
And I will say, it also has made me deeply appreciate a well-run set. I was working last week on a new show called All Rise, and every single human I touched was spectacular. Not in that way, but every single human I came in contact with was spectacular. And they all said it came from the executive producer, Mike Robbins. And I deeply appreciated that.
David, how about you? You going to make another movie now? And are you going to work with your wife again?
I'll be honest. The divorce proceedings are, we survived it. We learned a lot about each other. I think we learned a lot about each other's strengths and weaknesses, and we're better for it, which is great. I don't necessarily want to do it again. I don't want to work with my wife again because it's hard on a relationship.
Yeah.
This kind of intensity in this kind of way. There's lots of other things we're doing together, business-wise or development-wise. And she's a spectacular producer and obviously a wonderful actress. And she's a great wife and a wonderful person. I actually really like her, which is kind of a nice side note.
you guys have been married for like 20 years.
But I also, they say fail big and fail fast. And, you know, I don't consider Egg a failure in any way, shape or form. But if I look at my own shortcomings as a producer and I say, well, what did I fail at? I want to learn from that. And part of learning from that sometimes is when to pivot to another business or when to walk away. And I'm sure entrepreneurs are, hopefully they're nodding saying, yeah, you know, we got to know when to pivot. So if I were to produce something again, I don't know if I would want to produce a film from the ground up again. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. And unless you have the right kind of support behind you, support staff behind you, I'm not talking about the other people in the room with us, a lot of work ends up on your shoulders. And if it's not the kind of work that you want to be doing, then you need to look at your business model, right? And so I think I would do it again if it was a story that I said, oh, God damn it, I have to do this. But then, as Michelle said and Alicia said, I would then take a deep breath and pause and think, can this be done the way that I want to do it and in the time frame that other people want it to get done? And, you know, I think I would be a little more deliberate about it. And I just realized I started saying I wouldn't do it again, and now I just said I might.
Yeah.
So clearly, clarity of vision is not one of my strong suits.
We just need the story. We need the thing you're passionate about,
yeah.
And then maybe we'll see you making another movie. Maybe we'll see at least you two making a movie. I don't know about Michelle. She'll be running some company or something pretty soon, I'm sure. But in any case, I really appreciate you guys. That was awesome. I love how it's so simple. It's being an entrepreneur. And I think you guys, you know, what it's all about is just getting a business off the ground and getting it out there. And you guys did that. So thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.